Well, folks, we are here for our culture segment on the Boundless Show this week, and we're very privileged to have Jimmy Collins, the author of Creative Followership and one of the former executive leaders of Chick-fil-A. In fact, the book Creative Followership says My Journey to President of Chick-fil-A, and he even had founder Truett Cathy write the foreword for that. So, Jimmy, welcome to the Boundless Show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you today.
It's very fun to have you. Martha, Anthony, and I had the privilege of hearing Jimmy when he came and spoke at Focus on the Family on this topic of creative followership, which is great because I think we often we're very quick to go to seminars and workshops and conferences that deal with leadership, and that's such a popular topic nowadays. And Jimmy actually makes the argument that to follow well really sets you up for a unique and powerful form of leadership. So I want to dive right in, Jimmy, and ask, you actually kick off the book with Proverbs 27:18, and I thought that was great. Even when you were speaking to us, you kind of led with that and shared that verse with us, and it is, he who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who cares for his master will be honored. Can you explain, kind of set the framework for that verse and why you feel that's so applicable to the topic at hand?
Well, I think it's creative followership summarized in two lines. First of all, when young people start their careers, they need to understand why they're even employed.
Mm-hmm.
And that covers that. It also covers who you are really reporting to.
Mm-hmm.
And in the classroom today, young people are taught about leadership. There's a lot of emphasis on it. And when they finish school and they have that beautiful diploma on the bedroom wall, it looks great, but when they get to the workplace, they don't have a clear plan in their mind about what it's going to take to be successful here. First of all, they need to understand that nothing happens till someone sells something.
Mm-hmm.
And something has got to be produced. It's either a product or a service, and they have to participate in that. And that's what King Solomon said in that first line. He said, he who tends the fig tree, who tends the business, we could say, will eat its fruit. And the satisfaction comes from doing what it takes to eat the fruit, to get the results that you're looking for, the success and satisfaction. And then he goes on to say, the person who cares for the boss, I think boss is a good substitute for master there,
mm-hmm.
because we don't use that word much anymore. He who cares for the master will be honored. And it's that person who is able to help the boss produce the results that the organization is looking for that is going to be given the prime assignments, get the raises, get the promotions, and those things that we consider to be the recognition and reward that we receive from our work, whatever it may be. And I was a chicken salesman. But I think about many of the other people who work out there. They're not selling chicken, but they are producing something. It might be a medical service, or you know, it might be a counseling service. But it still you have to help the boss produce or do whatever the organization set up to do. But when the young people come to work, what I found is they are really surprised because it's not anything like they expected it to be. Most of them, when they get that college degree, think they're going to be put in charge of something.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to the workplace and realize they don't even know how to satisfy customers, they don't know how to please a boss, and they really don't know how to get along with their coworkers. So that's why I wrote Creative Followership.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's great. Well, first of all, you at Chick-fil-A, I mean, of all companies out there, Chick-fil-A employs plenty of young people, so you know exactly what you're talking about. You actually outline in the book what are really 35 principles for this. And this is why I encourage people to check out the book, because they're all just so succinctly written. They're very easy to ingest and just great ideas and very creatively told of what some of these are. And I just want to highlight, or have you highlight, Jimmy, a few of them. The first one being number one on the list, which is choose your boss. And I think a lot of young adults, you know, when you go into a job and you do tend to feel a little powerless, you know, in the responsibilities you're given, really getting into that job is a great opportunity to exert some kind of control. You actually make the point that people don't necessarily quit organizations, they quit bad bosses. Can you explain to us what, as a young person's looking to work for someone or looking to transfer jobs, what is a good boss? If you could really instruct someone what they should be looking for as that person to follow, what do they need to know?
Well, I think this will be different for some people. For me, I had four points in the criteria that I set up for a good boss. I looked for a boss who was a better person than I was. I didn't want to work for someone who was a lesser person than myself. And I'm thinking here of an integrity, character. Number two, I wanted to work for a boss that I could learn from, that would help me to grow professionally. And number three, I wanted to work for a boss who was building or growing something, because I knew that organizations that are growing or that are being built have the most opportunities, so they attract many of the best people. And then number four, I wanted to work for a boss who would value my input, my point of view, and would also let me make decisions. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there are many young people who are not looking for those same things, even though some people might want to use a little bit different point than the four that I used. Hmm. So when I looked for a boss like that, I knew that I would have what I was looking for. It took me a while to find a boss like that. Mm-hmm. And I have talked to many young people who say, well, you know, I just don't have enough contacts. I don't know how to make those contacts. And here's what I suggest to them. The best thing you can do to forward your career when you're still in high school and college is to get part-time jobs. Work part-time jobs, take internships, so that you get an idea of what the real workplace is like, and also you make contacts with potential bosses, and you can size them up to find the boss that you're looking for.
Yeah. That's excellent. You just briefly, one of the other points you make, another one of your principles, is to do what your boss doesn't like to do. And I love when you explaining this to us, you said there's probably a lot your boss doesn't like to do. So that provides excellent opportunity for you. Explain that a little bit.
All right. The first day on my first job, I was 12 years old, working in a neighborhood grocery store. And it dawned on me why Mr. Brown had hired me. He hired me to sweep the floor, carry out the trash, wash the windows, to deliver groceries on the bicycle, because he did not want to do those things. And the only reason he hired me is because I would do the things he didn't want to do. I used that with every boss I ever had. And when I went to work for Truett Cathy, I decided the best way for me to add value here to his organization is to do what he does not like to do. Mm-hmm. Now, in the early days of Chick-fil-A, people would come to our office and Truett would introduce me, because they had no idea who this guy is. And when he introduced me, most frequently they would say, well, what do you do here, Jimmy? And my answer was, I do what Truett does not like to do. Mm-hmm. Do you know what Truett's reply would be?
What's that?
I don't like to do very much.
That gives you plenty of opportunity.
It does, and that's what I try to teach young people. This is an essential element of making your adjustment in the workplace. Do what the boss does not like to do. And if you work for a boss who doesn't like to do very much, you have really wide opportunities to excel and to impress that boss as well as your coworkers that you're a person who gets things done.
Yeah, and can also make you, ultimately, in the right situation, pretty indispensable. I mean, you're going to be the person that he wants to keep around.
Exactly. You're going to be the person who gets good reviews. You're going to be the person who gets the best salary increases. And you're going to be the person who gets the prime assignments whenever you do those things the boss doesn't like to do.
Yeah.
Because what you have accomplished there is you have empowered the boss. Mm-hmm. That lets the boss do the things that he or she can do best, or maybe that only that boss can do.
Yeah. And I think it's hard. I mean, that's a good lesson for bosses, too, to relinquish those kinds of responsibilities. You know, so I think so many bosses are very controlling in the sense that they want to micromanage. They want to take control and have oversight of every single thing. And so that proving yourself as a good employee who can take ownership and take responsibility is a great thing.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the next one that I try to emphasize with young people is, you're going to have to do more than is expected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you can maybe keep your job by meeting the minimum requirements, but if you want to get ahead in your job, you want to get the attention of your boss and your coworkers as someone who gets things done, you've got to do more than expected. Sometimes I have people say to me, well, Jimmy, I put in 110%,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't even get recognized. If you're working with other people who are doing 100% and you do 110%, that does not make you highly visible. You got to learn how to do what it takes to be completing the extra mile.
Yeah.
Jesus said, go the extra mile, and it works.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely does. Well, here's another one that I want to camp on for a couple minutes, because this one is very near and dear to my heart, because I am a boss, and that is the principle of make your boss look good. Which I definitely
yes.
think my team needs to work on more. they're listening in, so I could say that. Which I think is, and of course, I have a boss too, so I'm responsible for that. But I think the first thing people are going to think of when they say that is, if I'm so much concentrating on making my boss look good, how will I ever look good? How will I ever be noticed for my accomplishments? How will I ever get ahead? Speak to that fear a little bit, Jimmy.
Okay. When you make the boss look good, you clearly indicate that you're a part of that boss's team, that you're going to run with that person, whoever the boss is. And some people think, well, it makes me look good if I make my boss look foolish or stupid.
Hmm.
No, that does not make you look good. It's the exact opposite is what happens.
Yeah, explain that a little bit.
People are leery of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you can explain that, because I think that's counterintuitive to some people.
Yeah, people are leery of associating with those coworkers that try to make the boss look bad. Because when they make the boss look bad, they think they're making themselves look good, but they're not.
What would you say as far as them not making the boss look good? I mean, is that just because they get a reputation for being a backbiter or a naysayer or just kind of a downer? What would you say is most problematic about that?
They will soon become known as a grumbler, mm-hmm. complainer.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't want to work with those folks. Every organization does acquire a few of those from time to time, but they don't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They are not promotable. They're not people who create harmony in the workplace. And every employee needs to realize that it's their obligation to help create a harmonious situation. And I tell people, stay away from those who grumble and murmur, because they're trying to undermine the boss or they're trying to undermine the mission of the organization, and you're not going to build a future with those folks.
Sure.
You can't build with people that tear down.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk in light of that, Jimmy. Let's talk a little bit about how we can really with our own attitude and what we have control over, change or improve our attitude towards our bosses. Like, how can we learn to see and focus on the best in our boss? And when do you know the difference between changing your attitude or approach? And when is it time to leave a job because of just a toxic boss-employee relationship?
Well, I found that over time that I sometimes learn more from my bad bosses than I did my good bosses.
Hmm.
What you learn is you learn how not to do things. And one of the things that you have to keep in mind in the workplace is if you are going to advance your career, you're going to have to get along with and help to make your boss successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because If you're looking for a promotion within an organization or better assignment, those folks that are looking for someone else to add to their team, they're looking for those that will help them build up, not help tear down. And so here's what I found. I found, now, let me back up a minute, Lisa.
Sure.
There was a time when I was in the war in business. You know, I was in there fighting, I mean, fighting like a tiger to get those titles and the authority that I thought I had to have in order to be successful. What I found is when I was in that fight of trying to promote myself, that nobody wanted to cooperate with me.
Hmm.
They were in the same ring that I was, and they wanted to be the winner.
Mm-hmm.
But then one day I stood back and I realized, you know, I could go farther if I would just take responsibility and forget pursuing these leadership roles and just cooperate. And that's when I started really practicing followership. When I practiced followership, where I would just take responsibility for whatever the projects were, and I would take the difficult and the dirty task, nobody was competing with me to get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that my coworkers were willing to join with me because they knew if this thing fails, Jimmy's going to take all the responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
If it succeeds, we all get to participate in the recognition and the rewards. So what happened is I went from an atmosphere of competition to an atmosphere of cooperation. And, you know, that worked so well for me, I just forgot about all that pursuit of titles.
Okay.
And they came along. They followed later after I took the responsibility, but I wasn't seeking them. Everybody knew that I was not seeking them. All I was trying to do was to get the jobs done and do it in such a way that people would join with me. And you know what I found? I found that over time, by practicing creative followership like that, there was no limit to what I could accomplish.
Huh.
I found that with my boss, he would trust me to do things he didn't have a clue whether or not I could do it. Hmm. But he knew that I would not stop. I would not give up until I did whatever it took to accomplish that task. And my coworkers knew that too, and they were not afraid to join with me to tackle those things.
Okay. So what is, Jimmy, just taking a little bit of a turn here, for an employee that's been in the workplace and somehow they just got off on the wrong foot and maybe they feel like they've been pegged wrongly or they're not truly understood or they're not being incorporated into the team, is there a way that they can improve kind of their reputation at work, or is there a way to, quote, remake their image so that they can have a better working environment among their coworkers and even their boss, if their boss has maybe mislabeled them?
Well, that's why I wrote Creative Followership, is for young people just starting and also older people that are in the workplace, but they need to redirect their career.
Hmm.
And the principles that apply to a beginner also apply no matter how far we go in the organization. And I have seen that happen, the very thing that you're talking about. I've seen people who could turn their careers around and go in a positive direction just by applying these things. Because most people who get to the point where they're not advancing are the ones who are responsible. You have to take personal responsibility and realize, I'm here because of what I'm doing. I can't control what the boss does, but I can certainly control what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times, though, as you indicated just a few minutes ago, when you get a boss that you just cannot get along with, that you cannot work with, and you have to fire that boss and get another one. And what I tell folks is, you want to choose your boss. Sometimes that means in an organization, if you like the organization but you don't like your boss, you get a transfer.
Hmm.
Most organizations that are growing and building something have bosses throughout that are looking for good members of the staff that they can add to their team.
Sure.
And it's not difficult in an organization that is growing, that has especially those that have a substantial size, to get a transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes you have a difficulty choosing a boss. Give you an example. Lisa, I like to tell stories because when I tell a story with my messages, people seem to remember it so much better. I have a young man that takes care of my landscaping. And he came to me one day and said, you know, I'm getting out of this business, but I want to continue to do yours. And he said, I've read your book, and I've applied for a job, and I was hired by the county police department. I've always wanted to be a policeman since I was a boy. He said, the only problem I have run into is I don't like some of those bosses over there, and I'm afraid I'm going to get assigned to one of them. And I asked him this question. I said, do you see some bosses there you would like to work for? And he said, yes, but, you know, I don't get to choose them. And I asked him, do those men that you think would make a good boss, do they know that you would like to work with them, that you would like to do what they're doing, and that you admire them? He said, you know what? I can choose my boss by getting the boss to choose me, can I? And it worked.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it will always work.
Sure. So in light of that, kind of as we wrap here, just one final question about hiring. I think there's a it's debatable, or the debate is out there as to whether or not, as we look for employees, we should be hiring for brilliance or we should be hiring workhorses. How do we know? I mean, ideally, I guess we look for both. But, that idea of someone who's going to get the job done, someone who's going to take on the tasks that the boss doesn't want. How do we balance that with especially a millennial generation that has been told that they're all superstars and they need to go and get these advanced degrees? And we've got ones with MBAs and all this stuff. And, you know, they're trying to be brilliant and trying to be the next entrepreneur and all that. What really is valued in the hiring process, and how do you distinguish between the two?
Well, the two things that I think are most important is character and personality. You can't hire someone to be a salesman who is bashful and cannot talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's very clear. Also, there has to be competence. You can't hire someone to be an engineer if they don't know anything about engineering and they're not, it's just not something they can do very well.
Hmm.
But there's also another factor involved in this, and that is initiative. That's what many bosses look for, is initiative. That's one of the reasons that many bosses like to hire someone who has been an intern with their organization, or they like someone who has had a part-time job. In February, the Pew Center released the results of a study they did on the cost of not having a college education. The thing that caught my attention most in this was the recent graduates were asked the question, what do you regret most about your college education? 50% of them, half of them, said they regretted most that they did not get any real workplace experience before they graduated.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point. I mean, it's very difficult to think of how I think we go in with such big expectations, especially those that are coming into their first jobs and thinking of, oh, how am I going to impress my boss? And I think these are great principles, Jimmy, to begin with, and things to think about. And I would just recommend, finding someone, you out there, finding someone like a Jimmy, or someone who, whether they are retired or someone who's in the workforce now, that you can talk to and get ideas from, and ask them, how has this situation worked for you? How have you been able to follow bosses and at the same time contribute well and pour into the business that you're in and learn and grow from it? I think that's a great practice to instill as well. So, Jimmy, I want to thank you for joining us today. Again, the book is Creative Followership: In the Shadow of Greatness, My Journey to President of Chick-fil-A. And I've been talking with Jimmy Collins. Jimmy, thank you so much for sharing this wisdom with our audience, and especially from years and years of experience, which is some of the best, the best teacher that there can be.
Well, thank you very much, Lisa. I'm pleased to have this time with you. But the thing that I value most about these few minutes is hopefully we will be able to reach some other young people and help them to advance their careers.
Absolutely.